WRKO, the voice of Boston.
Two guys came running by that were carrying a girl or somebody that was all bloody and it looked like they had been shot.
Well, we were at center stage, right at the front, just dancing away, having a good time. Jason was playing, and all of a sudden we heard pop, 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 pop.
We knew it was chaos and mayhem because people were running out of everywhere, and they were really, the police were really unaware of where the ground person was. They were going this way, that way.
I'm okay. I'm all right. Though you have gone from my life. You said that it would. Now everything should be all right. She says, I'm okay.
We cannot be defined by the evil that threatens us or the violence that incites such terror. We're defined by our love, our caring, and our courage. In the darkest moments, what shines most brightly is the goodness that thrives in the hearts of our people. That goodness is our lighthouse.
Of course, that's the dominant news of last week. Really, just a few hours after we left here, the news broke of the mass shooting in Las Vegas, and we're going to talk about that. It's a big liberty issue. We're going to talk about what we know, what we still don't know, talk about the speculation, and then the conversations that people have been having about that. We're going to get to that after the after a few other things that we want to talk about, and one of the first things that I want to talk about, we were actually going to talk about this last week, because last week in Massachusetts, new regulations went in place about car inspections, especially what people have to do when they're inspecting your car. And this story was actually called brought to my attention by Will. So, Will, do you want to tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, so as you guys know, I'm kind of a big car nut here. You know,
not that big, but
well. You know,
5'11".
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, 5'10", 5'11",
yep.
Whatever you want to say. So, essentially, what's happening is a new system is going into place to replace the old one, where it's by a company. Hold on, let me check my notes here. I got to check it. By Applis Technologies, where essentially now there's going to be cameras set up in the bay of the booth where you get your car inspected. And there's also a camera, I believe, on the inspector. And there's a video link that goes directly to, I believe, the DMV. Someone's watching at the DMV.
Live all the time?
I think so, yeah. It's live. Yeah. At least from what I've looked. Correct me if I'm wrong. It's all good.
I would say that maybe they said that like the recording's going there. I can't imagine that there's actually... essentially, you would have to have another employee
right,
in the state.
Well,
all
no, no. There's something in real time. I do believe. Yeah, I saw that somewhere.
The chance of an auditor watching it, your right. particular oh, inspection is probably very low.
True,
right.
But
I think that they probably are going to review them. But yeah, we'll see.
Either way, supposedly someone is watching.
Right.
And the whole thing is so that they can pretty much watch every car that comes in and see if an inspector misses anything
yep.
That they feel the car shouldn't pass inspection for. And one a couple of the issues with the car culture here, you know, a lot of people like adding aftermarket exhaust. They like lowering the car.
Yep.
And a big thing is window tint.
Yep.
And a lot of people are worried because some cars that passed inspection now that were mechanically sound might not pass now either.
Well, I'll give you a good example. So I have a on my car, I have a an Infiniti, and on the front, there is no space for a license plate. So the place where I bought the car, which I'll rename nameless, they did my inspection for years, and they always passed me. I'm pretty sure they won't be able to do that this year.
Well, you'll have to go in and find out.
Well, but so what's interesting is that actually affected me. This actually affected me today, too. So I was – so there's no polite way to tell this story. But I was driving home last week, and I had a milkshake accident on the inside of my car. I had stopped at McDonald's. There's a McDonald's around the corner from the studio.
Okay, I was worried that that was some kind of innuendo for something.
No. I had stopped at McDonald's, and I got a vanilla milkshake, which I did not know this, but McDonald's now puts whipped cream on top of their milkshakes. So I started drinking the milkshake with the straw, and all the whipped cream was staying on the top. And I thought, well, that's
stupid. I drink your milkshake.
Exactly. I thought that's stupid. So I figured I could squeeze it, and the whipped cream would come up to the top, and then I just squeezed it a little too hard, and the milkshake exploded in the interior of the car. So disaster, right? I mean, and you know, it's difficult to explain to people over the course of the week too. But so I went in. I was scheduled to have a detailing this morning. I dropped the car off. A guy calls me 2 hours later. He's like, "We can't get to it." I'm like, "You can't get to it." He's like, "We're so backed up from the inspection stuff that there's no space to bring it into the garage right now." I'm like, okay. And so I went there, and he told me that they've been able to do 3 inspections since October. And part of it is that there's a system with the cameras, and if they're not set up, you're not supposed to do the inspection. And then the other thing about it, though, is like at one point in time, they had a bad network connection. And if there's a bad network connection, you're also not supposed to do the inspection. So these guys are, you know, struggling from this really, as far as I'm concerned, unnecessary requirement by the state.
Well, the shops had to buy the equipment themselves, too.
Right, exactly. And it's like $6,000, right?
Yeah. Well, they only have to buy the equipment if they want to offer mass state inspections. They're not required to.
Right. So already that's a little sketch. And then, you know, so they have to buy the equipment. They have to have the connection. But then the other interesting thing about it is that, to a certain extent, I kind of wonder, is there a privacy violation going on? I mean, do they now, are they recording, this is so-and-so's car, came in for inspection on such a day. We've got a picture of it. We've got a picture of who was driving it. We can record all those things and do something with the information. It just seems like a really a significant overreach for them to say that they have to require that right. every inspection now.
Well, I mean, the Massachusetts safety inspections are generally just a scam to make money for the state.
Well, actually,
they don't keep anyone safe on the road. That is absolutely not true.
Well, Massachusetts is one of only 17 states that require safety inspections.
And they require an emissions inspection as well, right?
Yeah.
Which is, and so, I mean, it does lead to an interesting question about what do you think about car inspections in general? I can see an argument, a public safety argument, that some people would drive cars that don't have brakes. Why would they do it? They'd have to do it because they had to, whatever. But it's so dangerous that maybe you could say, okay, you have to have a car that has brakes on it, maybe a car that has lights on it. Although, considering the number of cars that I see driving without lights on them on a regular basis, I'm stunned. And it's always funny to me, like, I'll see cars that at night I'll be following them. They don't seem to have their lights on. And so, you know, I'll give them a friendly little flash. And then they turn on their lights and then they turn them off again. I'm like, why? Why?
Or some people even just drive with parking lights on, I see sometimes.
Yeah.
Well, what I see happening is, I mean, I think the state is fooling themselves if they think that there won't be shops that are going to figure out the new way to circumvent this method.
Right. Right. So the interesting thing about it, of course, is that my understanding is that it's not just that there's a video of the inspection, but they have to take a still video, a still picture
of the VIN number,
the VIN,
yeah,
the odometer,
yeah, and the mechanic performing the inspection.
Right. So it seems like it's it's as much bookkeeping and keeping track of people than it is really making sure that the inspection is actually done correctly. It really is. It's money, right? I mean, this is a huge contract.
Right. And the funny thing is, this company that's offering this was the company that tried to get the bid 2 bids ago, and they couldn't because Massachusetts said their standards for test performance weren't high enough.
Oh, my goodness.
So thankfully for them, they came back with this whole new system.
Yeah.
And got the bid.
So, I mean, it is. It's crony capitalism at its worst. It's sort of the government requiring you to do something else. And the interesting thing about it, of course, is that who's really paying for that, right? In the long run, it's you and me, because those costs are just going to get passed on. Although, Does the state actually fix the price of an inspection? I think it does.
Yes, it's statutory right now, $35.
And that hasn't changed. So all these small businesses...
It recently went up to 35 a year or so ago.
Yeah, it was like a year or two ago.
It was 24 before, I think.
But one of the main concerns, too, is that it'll take longer to do inspections now.
Right.
You know, like before you'd drive in and you could be out in like, what, 15 minutes? Something like that. But now it's kind of like they charge you... I read somewhere, I think it was they'll charge you hourly, almost.
Wow.
I mean, your inspection shouldn't take over an hour. It shouldn't. Still.
And honestly, it doesn't require, in my opinion, and I could be wrong, you can tell me, well, you're more of a car guy than I am, but it does not require a mechanic to do a car inspection, right? I mean, there's the machine that does the breathalyzer test, for all intents and purposes, the emissions test.
Some of these shops, Ken, I think it was in the one that you sent us, that that shop had someone whose sole purpose was to do these new inspections, and they haven't had any work yet. They're a paid employee,
right?
And they haven't been able to do any inspections because they were having problems with
the system's down.
Yeah, right. I think theoretically the reason it probably is supposed to be a mechanic is because they're supposed to actually... do a visual inspection of the car. They're supposed to look and see if the brakes look okay.
Well, they do drive the car around when they do the inspection.
No, they don't.
Yeah, no, totally they do.
They definitely do not. Absolutely not.
What?
They drive it. They might drive it into the bay if you parked it outside the garage.
Yeah, they'll drive it into the bay, but maybe dealers are different. I don't know. I think
your dealer's taking your car.
Yeah, what's going on with my car?
You got a little Ferris Bueller situation going on there.
We need to take a 30-mile ride with this car just to make sure it's working fine.
I swear they drive the car and they test the brakes.
Actually, some employee at a garage, I think in L.A. or something, got in trouble for that the other week. They got caught doing it.
Interesting.
Yeah.
You're going to have a word with your mechanic after the show.
Yeah, that's really surprising to me. I mean, it's interesting because since I've been taking it to the dealer, I always get it done when I'm doing other stuff. Usually, I'm paying
for that overpriced maintenance package.
Yeah, absolutely. But I have to tell you, I'm in love with my dealer and the work that they do there. But
get them to sponsor the show.
They should sponsor the show. Kelly Infinity, you should be sponsoring this show. The interesting thing, though, is that I am one of those people who always tries to push the month on my inspection.
And yeah, I used to do that too.
Yeah. And so the last time I did that, they told me that they can't do that anymore. So I...
What do you mean they can't do that?
So, like, essentially they said, well, you're supposed to be a May, and even though it's June now, we're going to give you a May sticker. That's the new state regulation.
What?
Yeah.
I haven't heard that. I've never heard that being the case.
Me neither. I forget all the time until, like, the last weekend where everyone else remembers, and it's like, oh, I got to get my car inspected.
Well, I mean, I used to always take it one day over, you know, get that extra month. That's how I'm undermining the government.
Well, that's what some people are suggesting that some people do is get their car, well, this was before it went into effect, to get their car inspected before October 1st when everything went into play, just to give themselves a cushion. At least the people with like modified cars and stuff like that.
Right.
Yeah, I have an October date and I'm kind of kicking myself for not getting one a few days ago.
Well, but now you're going to wait until November, right?
We'll see. I'll have to keep an eye on
that. Yeah, because you can report back to us if I'm crazy or if you get a November sticker.
Well, I'm going to visit my good mechanic up in Lowell that I've been going to for a while, and I'm going to get the inside scoop from him onto what's going on with this system.
All right. We're going to get a list of Ken's mechanic's address, and we'll be back right after this. So we talked about it at the top of the hour. You know, the big news from last week was the shooting in Vegas. I believe 58 people killed, 380 wounded. The numbers are obviously not super precise still. In fact, the number of wounded dropped today from 420 to 380 as they sort of sorted out duplicates. But it's a horrendous tragedy. So what do we know? Stephen Paddock, who people know remarkably little about, 64 years old, from Mesquite, Nevada, owned a lot of firearms, high-stakes gambler, although not super high-stakes, but played $100 hands, frequented in the casinos, had sold real estate, had been in Vegas for several days, got a comp room at the Mandalay Bay on the 32nd floor. And during Country Music Festival, opened fire on the crowd from a significant distance, about 400 yards. And obviously the drop from the 32nd floor down to the ground floor is pretty significant. One of the interesting things that they found out was that there's a piece of paper in there that had trajectory calculations. So he had planned beforehand, if you shoot a bullet that far, it's going to drop. However, he wasn't shooting for precision. We know that because he was using a device called a bump stock. I believe he had 12 bump stocks they found, 23 guns in the room. So just for people who don't know what a bump stock is, I would describe it as a neophyte, as sort of a pogo stick for the stock, so that when you fire the gun, the force of the recoil pushes the gun back and then forward again and causes the trigger to fire again and again and again as it pushes back and forth against your finger. It allows you to empty the magazine very quickly. However, you're not accurate at all. If you watch videos, and you can see videos of people using bump stocks, the barrel of the gun jumps around significantly. And honestly, most of these guns that he was using were not made to be fired that rapidly. And in fact, there is an argument to be made that it was his, I wouldn't say inexperience, but he was using weapons that were not designed for what he actually wanted to do. And we should all be thankful for that, because the death toll was horrendous, but it could have been even worse. So as he went through these guns, he was essentially firing a gun until it ran out of ammunition. Then he would throw it down, pick up another gun, fire it. So he didn't have to take time to reload. He had high-capacity magazines. I haven't heard anywhere of a total round count yet in terms of what was fired. But it's going to be pretty enormous. I mean, he was firing for 12 minutes, and I don't know that he went through all the guns. But some of the interesting things that happened, too, was that there was a very fast response. There was a security guard in Mandalay Bay who actually engaged loosely the Mr. Paddock, the shooter. The Paddock fired back at him through the door and wounded him. But that was about 8 minutes after the firing began. And this is all speculation. Nobody knows for sure what was going to happen. But it seemed like Paddock had a vision that he was actually going to escape after this, but he wasn't able to because of the confusion that showed up right after, because the security guard showed up, because the security guard was doing his duty and was really on top of things. Immediately, he had no opportunity to escape, and so he continued to fire. Now, there have been a lot of conspiracy theories about what's happened. I don't know any of them. I'm thinking of the ones that I've heard that were like the biggest. I heard, and then you can Google these, that there was a phone charger that was found in the room that did not match his phone. A day later, the police said, okay, actually it did match his phone. That seems a little odd to me, but I'm at this point in time, I'm going to take the police at their word. We know that he had wired $100,000 to the Philippines to his girlfriend, and he had sent her away. It's clear that there was a significant amount of planning involved in this. We also know that he had scoped out other locations, including Fenway Park and a spot in Chicago as well. So I think we've covered what happened. We know the aftermath. The police eventually killed him in his room. We want you to call in and talk about this. The number is 617-266-6868. You can text us at 680-680. Because what's been missing out of all of this, there's been a lot of talking heads. There's been a lot of one side saying this, one side saying that. But that hasn't been a lot of conversation about this issue. And, you know, here we are again, faced with a terrible event that nobody's happy about. And if we want to do something different about it this time, then what's happened after Newtown, and what's happened after all the other shootings, we need to have a conversation. So we got some somber topics, some reflection, and we're going to have a little bit of conversation about this. I want to start off with Scott in Worcester. Scott, what do you think about this event?
Good evening, Mr. Fishman. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you for calling.
I believe that there really is a conspiracy, and I'm gonna and I'll tell you the angle that I see.
All right.
I believe that George Soros could somehow be involved in this to try to make America, his motive to make America a communist nation and start a race war. Let's look at Soros' track record.
So you say to start a race war, but how do shooting country music fans start a race war? I mean, if the guy who's shooting them is a 64-year-old white rancher who, chances are, you know, just based on demographics, probably like country music.
Anything to stir the pot that he could start something, ignite it, ignites something where whites feel that they're being in some way, because you got to understand that Soros has been behind a Black Lives Matter.
All right. I see where you're going with this in terms of the point of that, you know, there is. If you are going to believe that there is something going on, you know, and the interesting question about it is that if it were a left-wing conspiracy, what does the left want? There was an amazing article in the New York Times by a conservative writer, Brett Stevens, who actually is a climate change, I wouldn't say denier, but certainly super skeptic. But he wrote a very interesting article that said it's time to repeal the Second Amendment. And for a conservative to say that, it's pretty shocking. His argument was that Democrats are actually not doing themselves any service, because when Democrats talk about the Second Amendment, they're generally lying. When Democrats say, oh, you know, I actually support the Second Amendment, but I want to put some restrictions on. But that rings false, because most Democrats don't actually support the Second Amendment. You know, there are some legitimate Democrats who, you know, support people's right to bear arms. On the other hand, there are a lot of people like, for example, John Kerry, who had a picture of himself with a shotgun and said he was a hunter, but nobody believed that. Let's go to Skippy. Skippy in South Boston, what do you think about this event?
Hi, Dan. I'm going to tell you, I normally swing to the right, but that doesn't mean I'm super glued in when it comes to the atrocity of last week. Just like, you know, that Sandy Hook and all that.
Yeah.
I believe, and I believe then, I believe now. First of all, let me say, the last 35 years, I've been carrying semi-automatic weapons.
Uh-huh.
With my occupation. That being said, however, those are just sidearms, whatever. There's no need for anybody to be having AR-15s or any kind of a modified version of an M16. Nobody needs those, not for hunting. They'll tear the poor animals apart. That's a nice long gun, one clean shot. It's humane. Kill the animal right away if you're hunting. So when they say it's for hunting reasons, or they want to go to a range and they get a thrill.
It sounds like you know a little bit more about it. Let me just pose one question to you. I have some friends out west who are ranchers. They have AR-15s, and they say to keep the coyotes in check, it's the best gun that there is for that. Does that make any sense to you? I don't know.
It's under those special circumstances. If you could show, yeah, I'm a rancher and there's coyotes, all right, maybe that's what you could. There's where you could have regulations. If you own it, you're getting inundated with the coyotes. But the average going to a firing range,
yeah,
it's not like you're going to be doing that.
They okay.
For a thrill. But watch, listen to this now.
All right.
These people, they think there should be no restrictions on firearms. They're crazy. If the NRA was smart, years ago they would have, never mind with the government, but each individual state said, you know what we're going to do? We're going to turn that 24-hour, it will give you 50 hours waiting period. Go along with it. Show that we want to make sure we're going to weed out the mental cases.
Yep.
But they don't. They hold the hard line.
I agree with you, and I think that they are hurting their cause in that respect, and that they probably could compromise a little bit. And in fact, that's a point that I heard the other day, is that a lot of people talk about, you know, this slippery slope, and the NRA says, well, if we give them an inch, You know, then the next thing you know, they're going to take all our guns away. And I hear a lot of people make that same argument when they talk about women's health issues. And they say, you know what, we're going to keep fighting against any restriction at all. When in reality, I think that, you know, probably 80 to 90% of people would agree on stronger background checks and potentially, you know, to link the two things together, maybe a first step in terms of saying, you know what, third trimester abortions, except in the life of the mother, we can make some things about that. We got Alex on the line from Haverhill. Alex, thanks for calling in.
Hey, how's it going?
Doing pretty well. What do you know?
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm not a conspiracy theorist. I think you know me that. I'm more of a food guy. You know that off the top. But it's just too much that doesn't...
Like what sort of things don't make sense to you?
Well, you know, first, you know, it takes the FBI 11 hours to say, well, the guy's not part of Al-Qaeda, but when Al-Qaeda makes three statements, hey, he was one of us. But yeah, here we are a year after Trump got elected, and they still can't figure out if the Russians helped him out. But yet, they got it all down packed that this guy was not part of Al-Qaeda.
Well, let me ask you something, because I saw that ISIS said, ISIS claimed that...
Yeah, it's going to be ISIS, yeah.
And now, the interesting thing about it, we had a conversation about this yesterday. I was trying to think of a case in which ISIS has claimed responsibility, and then they haven't been able to turn up a video. And I guess that there are a couple, but a lot of times they do show a video. And there is a persistent rumor going around now that there is some sort of ISIS video.
Yeah. You know, and I like how some people are like, well, how the heck did he bring the guns up? You know, have you ever gone to Vegas? I know I've gone.
I have.
Times. I know you've gone.
Yes.
If you're a salesman, you bring in large bags.
Yeah.
What hotel's going to check?
Not to mention, he was there for days.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not like they count the number of... days that you're there or the number of things. So one more thing, Alex, give me one more thing that didn't make sense to you.
That and the fact that having fired weapons myself, not that I'm an expert, but I was once a unit armorer in the guard.
Uh-huh.
You build up a sweat. I saw the pictures of this guy that when he got shot. When he shot him, see, the cops didn't kill him, he shot himself in the head.
Right.
Guy's dry. I mean, I've gone to the range. You're sweating when you're firing weapons. And the level of the rate of fire, having relatives, cousins that are police snipers, Army and Marine snipers,
yep,
all say the same thing. You're putting up a sweat when you're getting ready. You are sweating, you know what, when you're getting ready to fire. I'm looking at this guy's dry.
All right. Well, those are all really good points. And I appreciate the insight, because that's certainly something I didn't know. I didn't know that you build up that much of a sweat when you are shooting. There certainly are things that people, I mean, no matter what the situation is, right? Any crime scene, we don't know everything because we can't see everything. So we're asked to trust, and we're asked to trust people who at various points in times have been involved in events to make us distrustful. Right now, I don't see any evidence. Like, for example, one of the things that the people said immediately was there's a second shooter. And they pointed to audio evidence. But at least to me, and again, I'm not trained, but it seemed to me like the audio evidence they were talking about was more likely to be sound reflection from another building, because a high-powered rifle fired under those circumstances really does make a lot of noise. One of the other things that people talk about is that, you know, why were there two holes in the windows? Because if you saw the picture, two windows were smashed out. Supposedly, he smashed them out with a ball peen hammer. One window was so that he had a line of sight to the airport. And they did actually find that he had shot a couple of fuel barrels, jet fuel containers, did not pierce them. Obviously, bullets lose a tremendous amount of force at that distance. And I'm pretty sure that he would not have been able to ignite jet fuel with a bullet. I'm not 100% sure. Again, I'm not an expert on this. But for whatever reason, the fact that he took some time to try to do that is very interesting.
And yeah, I'm generally an Occam's razor kind of guy.
Yeah.
I mean, to think about the difficulty to pull something like that off.
Right.
If you're a deep state agent, and to keep all of the Las Vegas PD and the low-level FBI agents from seeing the truth,
right,
who responded, and leaking it out there that there's something really, really dark going on. That seems really far-fetched in my mind for that to be able to take place.
So I agree with you, but let me play a little devil's advocate in that, what about Edward Snowden, right? There's 1,000 other agents that know everything that he knows, but he's the only one who came forward.
Right. But that did get out there, didn't it?
It did. It's true.
And to a lot of those agents, I'm sure that they feel, debatably less guilt about killing people in other countries that they can maybe cover as combatants versus innocent people at a concert.
Right. I mean, right. You're exactly.
So it's a whole nother level to say that.
There could be conspiracies outside of one that involves the collusion with the police, even if it were just like they wanted to. For example, there's a theory that it really was ISIS, and they don't want to tell us that. They don't want to give ISIS credit for it, something like that. I mean, these are all far-fetched. That's the problem with the conspiracy theory, is that in general, you're talking about, having...
I think most of the people in our highest levels of state would like it to be ISIS, or something that they can make it a rallying cry for some kind of intervention.
Right, because what does it mean if it's not? What if it is just this crazy wealthy guy who started shooting people? I don't know. I mean, we don't have a great answer.
Well, a lot of people are talking about what can we do to prevent this, but in a lot of ways, there's things in life that are not preventable. And a guy that, for all intents and purposes, had no criminal history, was off the radar as far as police and FBI were concerned.
Right.
Who decides to pull off something like this, unless you get a chance where someone sees something that is unusual, out of place, and it gets reported and then it gets discovered, you're not going to prevent these things from happening on very rare occasion.
Well, I'll play a little devil's advocate again. We say off the radar, but he owned 42 guns.
Right. In this country, you have a right to own firearms.
Right.
And so I mean, if you know anything about people that own firearms, you know that that is not a high number of firearms to own.
Okay.
So if you want to go down to your local gun club and make friends with those people, you'll quickly find out they're mostly saving up to buy that next gun safe to fit their 100, 200 firearms.
Wow. I had no idea that people own many guns.
It's funny that the statistics on guns in the United States is about one or two guns per person in the United States, but those are heavily weighted towards, gun enthusiasts.
Interesting. So, I saw I'm trying to think of the exact number. Somewhere it said that 28% of Americans are gun owners. Does that seem like a number that you're...
Yeah, maybe it's hard to know. I mean, it probably, if that's person-wise, maybe households, it would probably be higher, right?
Right.
But
yeah, it's
maybe.
So it's interesting to think that, the argument is that there's nothing that we could know about this guy, but the one thing that you could have known was that he was a gun owner, if you could know that, which I'm pretty sure that you don't actually track that, right? They know the people who have the cards, but they don't know that they've owned a gun because gun purchases.
Well, in a lot of states, you don't need any kind of firearm license to purchase firearms. I think that's what a lot of people miss who might have grown up in a more liberal area that has heavy restrictions on firearms, is that, you're a Nevada resident. You can go to a gun store and buy an AR-15 just showing your driver's license as proof of who you are.
Interesting. But you then fill out a federal form. They have the Brady Bill, background check, week.
Right. You fill out a federal form.
Yeah.
And then that gets called into what's called a NICS check.
Uh-huh.
And so your name gets run, and then they give a go or no go on the sale, basically.
So if all these guns were legally bought.
Exactly.
There were... 32, although if I buy five at a time, it's probably just one background check, right?
I believe so, yes. Yeah, you can buy multiple on one form.
Interesting.
I believe.
So that makes sense.
So you're talking about statistics, it's hard to know how many guns there are owned privately in the United States, because like you said, you could buy a handful of rifles on one check.
Right, and you have no idea how much they are.
Now, states like Massachusetts, which have a de facto registration, they say it's not registration, but essentially every transaction gets recorded.
Right.
So it's essentially to track it. They might know,
So it's interesting. One of the proposals that people have come out with as a way to not necessarily restrict people's right to own guns, but impose some control, is to require gun insurance. the idea that if you own a firearm, you have to have some form of insurance company insurance, and the insurance company will weigh the risks. If you only have one gun, if you've never been convicted of a violent crime, you know, you might pay $10 a year in gun insurance. On the other hand, if you've shot somebody previously, you know, your gun insurance might be more.
Yeah, I think it would be nice if people were, you know, decided to get gun insurance, but in no way should it be mandatory. Mm-hmm. I mean, you're talking about the government forcing you to buy a service, you know, like the individual mandate.
Right.
Car insurance in Massachusetts, for example.
Right.
All things that infringe on your liberty.
Well, it's interesting because car insurance, you're actually not required to have car insurance unless you want to drive your car on public roads.
Sure.
And that's sort of your contract with the public, people would argue. But that doesn't hold water.
Show me where I signed that contract in.
Well, I mean, you know, this.
Probably when you get your driver's license, you're implicitly.
I mean, the argument is that, you know, show a firefighter where you've signed a contract with you to save you from a burning building. He didn't.
No, he's paid by your stolen tax dollars. That's how they afford to pay him.
But is there a contract that says he has to do it?
His employment contract, I'm certainly sure.
Yeah, but it doesn't specify Ken in the contract. The point is that there's some sort of...
He's paid by force from stolen dollars.
If you're going to... Yes.
An aside being that the majority of firefighters in the United States are all volunteer. Actually, yeah, about 70% of firefighters are volunteer.
Most firefighters are volunteers.
Thankful for those volunteers.
Yeah. I'm thankful for all firefighters. I think that it's one of the situations in which having people who prevent catastrophes that could be worse benefits us all. I mean, we talked about this before, about the big fire down in the middle of Boston that took place in 50-mile-an-hour winds, and it was because firefighters were there to step in that it didn't get worse. We strayed a little bit from our idea, though, about what are some concrete things that we can do. We talked about gun insurance. I want to talk more about a couple more options when we get back from the break. So when we left, one of the things we talked about was, you know, what can we do? And there is a question, what can we do? What should we do? Is there really a problem here that is so dire that involves government coming in and restricting people's liberty? And I don't know. I know that after Newtown, you know, when somebody takes guns into an elementary school and kills children, I was pretty horrified after this event, comparably horrified. Statistics show that gun deaths are actually down year to year for a pretty significant time now. In terms of interventions that I would want the government to be able to take, I think that we could do a little better job on data, but as we talked about earlier, there's nothing that would prevent Stephen Paddock from having these guns, from using his wealth to plan a pretty heinous event. What could you do to stop that? And if he didn't have guns, if he were hell-bent to kill this many people, right, he still could have done it without guns pretty easily, right?
Well, one of the disturbing things with this guy is how well-off financially he was, even if he was prohibited from buying firearms legally.
Right.
You're kidding yourself if you don't think there's a black market for these type of weapons in
well,
the United States.
Well, yeah. I mean, one of my favorite comments about guns... Dr. Mark Feldman at the presidential debate said...
Which presidential debate?
The Libertarian presidential debate. They said, you know, Dr. Feldman, do you support gun control? Do you think children ought to be able to walk into gun stores and buy guns? And his response was, I support gun control. I think people should control their guns. I don't want criminals to have guns. But I don't know how to stop them. They don't seem to obey the law. And that is our problem. You know, no matter what happens, I mean, look at countries with, you know, very strong gun rules, and France, for example. And yet there was an enormous shooting, several shootings in France very recently. There is a truth to the matter that criminals will always behave criminally. If you look at, you know, this was the largest mass shooting, but it was certainly wasn't the largest domestic terrorism event in the United States. I'm pretty sure that's still Timothy McVeigh and the Oklahoma City bombing, where 183 people or so were killed. And, you know, that was with relatively simple ingredients. There are other, you know, mass attacks in the United States with weapons other than guns, and they're horrific when they happen.
I mean, basically, these large-scale events and attacks that occur get a lot of play because it's very emotional.
Right.
And it's hard to say, how could we not do something about this many people dying? But the statistician in me wants to look at the numbers, you know.
Right.
You know, what? 2016 FBI statistics, there were 374 murders committed with rifles. That's in comparison to 15,000 murders total.
Right.
2.5% of murders committed with rifles.
Right.
You know, compare that to the fact that 656 people were strangled or kicked to death and 1,600 were stabbed to death. It's apparent that even if you banned all of these rifles from even being allowed to be sold, that's a small fraction of the murders.
Right.
That happen in the United States. So there's a narrowing focus that happens when one of these events happens that I think a lot of people that would like to see the Second Amendment eliminated like to latch onto and use for their own causes, unfortunately, instead of look for actual solutions to violence in the United States.
So I guess, you know, I mean, that's a very compelling point. I mean, statistically, there's that part about it. And, you know, we talked about the fact that I think we quoted a statistic that 28% of Americans own guns. And I would make the argument that probably, you know, 4/9 worth of those gun owners have never had any problems with the law, are responsible, practice good gun safety, and do nothing to make people lose, to have done nothing to jeopardize or to have their rights jeopardized. And those are the people. Andy Craig wrote a wonderful piece about this where he said, you know, it's not that it's guns that I'm concerned about. It's the fact that it's a liberty. It's a thing. And, you know, you can say that it's guns. You can say that it's cannabis. You can say that it's anything else. But when it comes down to people practicing their liberty, the question is, why does government have the right to take that something away from you if you're not hurting anybody with it? You know, Skippy called in and talked about nobody needs an AR-15. But if you wanted to have one, who is the government to judge? Who's me to judge? You know, when we make decisions about people's rights, we have to say we can't judge for anybody else. I don't have a problem with us lobbying, telling people, you know, we wish that you would be safe. We wish that you would not have a gun in this situation. But the bottom line is that individual responsibility is in your hands.
People talk about sin taxes. The government taxes cigarettes because it says smoking is bad and they want less people to smoke. The government taxes alcohol because it says drinking is bad and they want less people to drink. So why is the government taxing income? Join that discussion and lots more and listen live to Liberty on the Air with your host Dan Fishman every Saturday night at 11 p.m. right here on The Voice of Boston, AM 680 WRKO.